CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Guys, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast.
How are you? We are all over the musical landscape. Diversity, right? Yeah, man. So let's have an open mind for today's show, because again, we're going to hit some heavy metal, we're going to hit some new metal, we're going to hit some alternative, we're going to hit some outlaw country, we're going to be all over the place. I love it, though. I love it, because I'm a diverse guy when it comes to the music myself. But let's talk about who's on the show. First of all, we got Wes Scantlin from the band Puddle of Mud. So he's going to be joining me in a bit for like a 10-minute interview. And then we also got Will Palmer from the band Angel Witch. We just heard some old school Angel Witch right here. That was Extermination Day. Now that was actually recorded in 1980. It's from the BBC show Friday Rock. It's the Friday Rock show, which was done by the BBC. And Will wasn't playing on that because Will wasn't in the band back in those days, but he is a part of this legendary band, the new wave of British heavy metal band, Angel Witch, and I'm excited for their new album, man. Will's going to tell us all about it, and he is keeping the Angel Witch flag flying, of course, with Kevin, and man, such good stuff. Love Angel Witch, and I'm so glad he's joining us here on the podcast. So we will hear some new music from Angel Witch and talk with Will Palmer, the current bassist of Angel Witch, in just a bit. Man, I got so much stuff to do, like in my real life, but I've just been sitting here all morning, like listening to music, thinking about what I want to play for you guys. And like I said, we're all over the place. But first, let's take a trip back to what I thought was a pretty strong year in hard rock and heavy metal and loud rock, if you will. 2007, man. Back in that time, I had no kids. I had been married 2 years at that point, and life was a lot different, man. I was living in Jersey City, not out here in the suburbs. Actually, I moved to Maplewood, the New Jersey suburbs, about 20 miles from New York City, in 2007 with my wife, Emily, before we had our son, Harrison, who was born in 2008. My dog, Ozzy, we got him in 2007. Just sharing my personal memories of 2007. But I remember a lot of good music coming out at that time. The Talking Metal podcast was a mere 2 years old at that point. But let's go revisit some music that I really dug that was released back in 2007. This is Exodus with the song Riot Act.
We'll be right back.
All right, one written by Gary Holt right there. Of course, Jack Gibson on the bass. Rob Dukes, a guy who I got to know and still know, talk with him frequently on the phone. Love Rob Dukes. He's on vocals on that one. Riot Act by Exodus from 2007. Keeping the 2007 theme going, this is Sign of Fear by Primal Fear. We'll be right back. A little Primal Fear here on Talking Metal. My name is Mark Striegel. I am in the time machine with you right now. We are back in 2007, rocking it. And let's keep it going with the good music that was, some great music that was released back in 2007. This is By Our Brotherhood with Seth. No idea what that means, but the band, The Vision Bleak, I don't know much about these guys, but I was jamming this song back in 2007 quite a bit on my iPod. Remember those things? This is by the German goth metal band, The Vision Bleak. And again, the song is By Our Brotherhood with Seth here on Talking Metal. Vision Bleak here on Talking Metal. All right, let's get out of 2007. Get back into the future, right? Back to the future. Here we are. All right, so we are in 2019, and Angel Witch is about to release a brand new record, which I am completely psyched for. The great heavy metal band Angel Witch. When you think of the new wave of British heavy metal, you think of course Iron Maiden and Def Leppard, but you also think of bands like Angel Witch, Saxon, Diamond Head, Raven, So much good stuff. I would even throw it like Girl School in there, right? Holocaust. Some people say Motorhead. I don't say Motorhead because to me they had a different thing going. They were ahead of that movement. And I don't know. A lot of people argue with that with me, but I don't include Motorhead in the new wave of British heavy metal movement. Maybe they overlapped with it a little bit, but the same way, you don't include Judas Priest with that. You don't, you know, I mean, Motorhead were doing it before then, you know? I don't know. I just don't include Motorhead in that movement. People tell me I'm wrong when I say that. But anyways, all right. So anyways, this is Will Palmer. And again, he is the current bassist in Angel Witch. He wasn't a part of the classic era of that band, but he is flying the flag high for them and doing them right. I love what they're up to. This song's great. This is brand new Angel Witch right here on Talking Metal. Don't Turn Your Back, followed by my interview with Angel Witch bassist Will Palmer.
I have Mark Striegel of Talking Metal and calling in for the first time ever from the great band Angel Witch, bassist Will Palmer. How are you, Will?
Yeah, doing good, man. Good. How are you?
Good. Where are you at today? You in the UK? Where are you calling in from?
I'm in the office of a record label I run, and I took delivery of a load of Angel Witch LPs today, which I'm doing the UK mail order for this one. Because
The
label let me have it for ourselves. So, I just carried about 300 vinyl down the stairs and sort of staring at it, wishing I hadn't signed up for this, you know?
Right. Well, you're getting a workout there, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Very cool. I want to hear about the label and what you do with that, but let's start talking about the new album by Angel Witch. Which I've heard the song "Don't Turn Your Back," which I love it. The production is exactly what I want. The style, the song, great stuff. And again, the new album, I believe, out November 1st. Angel of Light by Angel Witch. How does this album vary from As Above, So Below in your mind?
I mean, the rule tends to be, you know, when you're doing promo for a new record, you throw the old one under the bus.
Okay.
But in this case, I just think it's kind of true. It's just better. There's no real stylistic shift, you know, in what we're doing. I just think we planned it better. We rehearsed it better. We are playing better as a unit. So it was easier for the songs to come together. And it just... It feels to me that there's less flab on the songs, you know. It's kind of more muscular. It's like the songs are leaner, they get to the point better. And then I think the production is, well, it blew my mind, really.
Sounds great.
The way it kind of, you know, we kept it simple. You know, our drummer, with not a single drum edit on the record, it was a real point of principle for that guy, you know. So every time there was a kick drum out of place, we all had to troop back into the room and play the song together again. And it was really like, you know, I think because we'd been rehearsing a lot harder than we did previously, we were able to do that, but it's still kind of hard, you know. And then, you know, we didn't spend too long tracking too many guitars in terms of like layers and layers of rhythms. We spent a long time just getting the amp sounding good and just trying to make the thing like a live, you know, you don't want to try and, we didn't want to try and make a like a retro record, you know, but we wanted to make a record that sounded like a heavy metal record, you know, like from the ones that we listened to. We didn't want computer drums. We didn't want sort of, you know, cut and paste guitars. We wanted just the sound of four guys in a room playing through old Marshalls and on, you know, a big old 70s kit. And so, you know, you spend a lot of time on that stuff, but it's not actually, you know, you're spending more time just trying to get all the mics placed right and to try and, you know, get the takes rather than spending a long time like fixing things up, you know.
It sounds like it's like a real organic approach,
yeah.
You know, as opposed to like you're saying, oh, replace that kick drum with a sample. Or let's use the Kemper and just plug directly in. And
none of that.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome.
And, you know, the thing is, yeah, if you use a Kemper, you can get a tone and, you know, you can just dial it up and away you go. But we were just going through amp head after amp head after speaker cabinet after speaker cabinet, you know. And of course, we ended up back using just Kevin's head that he's had since, like, you know, 1979 or whatever, you know, just
right.
Well, let's just use this and oh, look, that looks funny, that, but that sounds exactly like Angel Witch.
Yeah. absolutely. And you mentioned Kevin. How does the songwriting process work? Do you guys all collaborate with Kevin, or is it
he writes it, he starts it, you know? And I'd say that, you know, 90% of it is him. But we kind of get involved in, he'll send us demos over, you know, that he's worked up at home on a, you know, just using the computer. Just actually got a drum kit in the office here, like a digital one, which will be, when we go on tour, we'll be driving down when we pick him up and leaving that with him so he can actually start playing drums on the demos.
Right.
And for the next record. And so he brings them in, we've learned them. prior to the rehearsals, and then we kind of really will be vocal about arrangement ideas and stuff like that, you know. He's open to it, and then, you know, there's this sort of 10% at the end where it sort of morphs because we're all bringing just our own flavor to it, but it's not really in, never in the riffs, you know. It's always just kind of in the way tempo shifts, or maybe we should actually drop that riff, or maybe we extend that there. Maybe that would be a good place for a solo. Have you thought about that? You know, this sort of stuff, you know, I mean, but it's Kev's songs, and, you know, and me and Jim have helped out with some lyrics and stuff on the record, but I mean, you know, it's Kevin's band, man. That's what, right. That's what the Sound of Angel Witch is kind of what's come out of his head.
Right on. And, you know, obviously you've been with the band, I think, well over a decade at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Kevin, he's been doing this since the 70s, you know, one of the, the innovators of the new wave of British heavy metal movement. How much of that history and band legacy comes into play when you're working on music or getting sounds in the studio? Is that always kind of on your mind? Oh, we need to kind of stay true to the legacy,
well,
or not
it
really?
It sort of is to me.
Yeah.
And I think
understandably
it's always
so.
Kev. But I mean, the thing that it's a weird one because, you know, on one hand, like Kev, of course, loves what he does because it was his vision that he came in the late 70s. You know, what Angel Witch went on to do was ahead of its time. But I think, you know, then bands see other things happening, and there are some Wilderness Years records there where it was like sort of playing catch up a little bit, you know, and trying to, the one that was, you know, Screaming and Bleeding's trying to be a bit thrashy. And then there was one that was like a bit sort of like late 80s sort of melodic heavy rock or whatever, you know. And but I grew up just listening to that first Angel Witch record. And so did Jim, and so did Frederick. So, like, you know, I think we were able to, not that we're even trying to pull Kevin into that thing, because it's just, I just think we're just the right support network around him for him to be able to do what comes naturally to him, rather than having people in the band who would be just like, oh, you know, maybe we should try, you know, maybe we should try and get some sort of Trivium drum sound or something. Do you know what I mean? Just because, or something that's, you know, that they're listening to that's kind of current. Because, you know, that can then mess up the direction of a record, and you can lose the focus of what it's all about, you know. And so, yeah, I think we do keep it sounding very organic and old school and to the traditional formula of Angel Witch. But I think that's more because the fact that, you know, it's sort of encouraging Kev to do what's already in his head, really.
Yeah.
And just the kind of three fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, four fans. I mean, the guy that produced the record, James, he plays in this great band called The Gentleman's Pistols, who are friends of mine. And you know, he just is, you know, when you've got a guy upstairs who's got a couple of different pressings of the first Angel Witch album on vinyl.
Right.
In his collection up in his house where he lives above the studio, you know you're dealing with the right guy, because he's just not going to accept, like, an oversaturated guitar tone or, like, you know, let's try and trigger the drums up to sound like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, Machine Head or something.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned Jay. Jay is the producer. What's his last name?
James Atkinson.
James. Oh, okay, James. Mm-hmm. What was it? James?
Atkinson.
Cool. Now,
we'd all call him Atco because he's from the north, and that's just the way that they nickname each other.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got you. Was he involved with the last record at all?
No, not at all. I wish he had been. At that point, he had a studio in Bradford then, but it was really quite small. And we recorded in London with a guy called Gomez, who's a friend of ours and everything. But he was more of an engineer, really, and less of a producer. You know, the good thing about Atco is he's got a real, because he's a songwriter himself and a good guitar player and a great singer. You know, he can say, "Oh, I really think you want to do that again," and everyone will listen to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a level of respect, and a lot of time with engineers, and it was just not the case with the last LP, but with other engineers you work with, they'll be very much like, you know, they're just trying to be the producer. They're trying to flex their muscles, you know. not necessarily doing it for the song. And so we sort of approached this whole thing where every song, you know, everything we did was for the benefit of the song and the benefit of the listener, you know? So, you know, maybe a guitar solo got cut in half, or, you know, maybe, you know, we didn't milk the chorus as much as we'd like, because we all really liked it. We'd like to play it twice, but we decided no, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of that kind of going on. I mean, the songs are pretty long, but they don't feel it, you know?
Right on. Now, you mentioned your record label, and I know now the album Angel of Light is going to be released, at least in this country, Metal Blade, right?
It's Metal Blade Worldwide, yeah.
Okay. And then how does your label play into Angel Witch?
Well, I'm not actually doing anything via my label, which is called Bad Omen Records, but I'm using my office to mail out all this UK mail order. Just purely because, you know, well, it helps the band a bit better, and Metal Blade are cool with that, you know.
Right.
And it helps us, you know, grow the band camp and all that stuff that we're all very keen on. We did a re-release of the 1970s demos via Bad Omen, although, you know, we set up a little Angel Witch sub-label called Extermination Day.
Oh, cool.
And what happened with that was there was a really big, terrible fire in the summer of 2017 at this tower block called Grenfell Tower. And like 78 people lost their lives. And we sort of woke up in the morning sort of seeing that news. You know, me and Kevin, the London guys, and Jim's lived in London for like 17 years. We were just like all kind of horrified. So what we did is we just put the digital files of these 1970s demos, the 78 and 79 demos that Kevin did, and we just sort of gave them away for whatever you wanted to pay, and gave all the money to charity.
Wow,
on Bandcamp.
Cool.
And then people just started asking if we put it out on vinyl. So we ended up just putting it out on vinyl, you know, which, you know, I hasten to add that didn't go to charity. We never made a claim that it did, but sometimes people kind of go, oh, it's really good that you sold that vinyl for charity. Well, we didn't. We still raised, you know, a couple of £1,000 for Grenfell Tower, but the LP was just the LP, really. And that kind of effectively helped us write this album, because we were able to fly the drummer in from Sweden, and everyone get together in London and have a hotel, right, and all that sort of stuff. So we were kind of able to get to a point where we had all the songs written and we'd done a demo. We hadn't even nailed down the offers for the labels yet, you know, and we just kind of knew that we could sort of hold out for the best deal.
Cool. So the last record was Metal Blade 2, but it sounds like you guys signed a new deal for this current record.
The last record was Rise Above.
Oh, it was Rise Above. Okay.
Which only came out in America via Metal Blade.
Okay.
And I worked at Rise Above, and I was a partner in the company actually for about 18 years. And you know, so when Kevin got the band back together, he had contacted us and sort of said, hey, do you know, I'd like to do a record. Would you be interested in doing a record? And we were like, yeah, of course, you know. So we said we'd do a record. And he said, do you know any musicians? And I'm like, yeah, hello.
Right.
You know, I know a bass player. And it was a kind of a bit like that. It was sort of I feel that lineup was a little bit sort of thrown together with, like, you know, the gang, you know.
Right on.
Our circle, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's still, you know, I mean, Frederick, our drummer now, he's been in the band for a couple of years. He was in Witchcraft, who were on Rise Above.
Right. Oh, okay, cool.
So, yeah. And then, yeah, before Jim was in the band, we had Bill Steer on guitar.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you hear much from Bill, because he was doing live stuff
for
you guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we hear it for each other a lot. And, you know, he's been... You know, he was in the Gentleman's Pistols with Atco, the producer, and still is, actually.
Oh, cool.
Although they're not really that active, because Carcass is incredibly active.
Right.
And you know, yeah, so, you know, we're all still pretty tight. You know, I mean, Bill loved, it was great when he was in the band, but, you know, when he reformed Carcass, that's his band, you know, and they just... they did an album, man. They just never seemed to stop touring.
Right on.
It looks, you know, I fear for him because, you know, it's it just never seems to stop. And, you know, there you go.
Yeah. So speaking of touring, Angel Witch, what is the plan for you guys moving forward?
Well, we're going to be touring. We're going to be trying to get as many European festivals as we can, as well as actual touring. Whether or not we're going to come to America is a... Kevin's got some hoops that we need to jump through.
Yeah, I know he had some problems getting over here a number of years and back.
It's kind of not easy at the very specifically at this current time. There are a lot of people getting visas denied for no real reason, and it's just the environment's become a little bit bit more hostile.
Yeah,
and you know, we could overturn it, but we don't know how much money it'll cost us. I've got an idea of it, and you know, there's a hell of a lot of touring we'd have to do to just to pay that back.
Yeah,
you know, never say never, you know. But because it's certainly a lot closer than it was. I mean, the amount of times, you know, you get like Maryland Death Fest or whatever, make you an offer, and then, you know, you hear from like the Decibel guys or whatever. And I'm just sick of saying no to festivals in America. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, we've played Canada a couple of times, and we're going to go back and try and actually tour across the whole top. You know, if anyone's anywhere near the border, then at least they can, you know, make a weekend of it or whatever, come see us.
Oh yeah, man. We always we drive up for, or sometimes even fly up to Heavy Montreal each year. It's a great festival.
And we played Montreal in 2015, I think.
Oh, cool.
It's ripping. Yeah, we didn't play Heavy Montreal. We played quite a small club there as a festival called Wings of Metal, and it was great. It was like sold out in advance, and it's just really cool, really great weekend, actually.
Awesome. Cool. Well,
Canada's been really nice to us, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, great town. Montreal is a great town and a very, very big metal scene there. And in Canada in general, the fans love the heavy rock. So
yeah, well, we played in Toronto like on a Wednesday night. What we did is we just got a stopover in Toronto and we were flying down to Chile. And we played like a Wednesday night in Lee's Palace in Toronto, and it's like a 500 capacity club, you know. And it was basically, so you know, the promoter said you can say that that's a sold out gig, you know. And the promoters always, they're always complaining, they're never happy, so he was happy. And it was wild. And that was like a Wednesday night, you know. So
wow.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we're going to come back and just try and get across the whole country, really.
That would be awesome. And, of course, it would be even cooler if you could get to America, but we will see what happens.
But it's not off the list.
Right.
You know, there's a few, you know, first we have to deal with Kevin's stuff. And then once we've done that, then we just have to deal with the handling, just the straight up P1 visas. But, I mean, I know a few people who've had their P1 visas. Well, my friend Chris, who's in Orange Goblin here, I mean, they just hit him with all this extra stuff that, like, they'd submitted 3 months up front and all that stuff, but the upshot was that he didn't get his visa back till after their tour was over. So he had to, and his passport. So he was sitting there in England while the band had to get on a plane and play with a drummer that they'd hooked up out there. And because, you know, you can't get refunds on your flights, you can't get all that stuff back. It would bankrupt a band if they didn't get on those planes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
We'd go out there and play without Kevin.
Yeah, you can't. That would be
a joke, man.
Yeah. No, I hear you for sure.
You know, we could play with one guitar if Jim couldn't come. We could get a different bass player, you know, find someone who can play the drums, you know. It wouldn't be the same, but it would be a band, you know.
Right. Right on.
But, you know, that's the issue there. So, but you know, I've been speaking to attorneys and stuff, so you never know.
Okay. All right. Well, keep
us posted.
Just don't
hold your breath. That's all I say.
Right. I got you. And again, we are completely psyched for the new Angel Witch record out by Metal Blade. It comes out November 1st, and it is Angel of Light. There's currently a song up there on Amazon Music and iTunes, Don't Turn Your Back, which sounds just great. And I cannot wait for the full album. Will, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
And you.
Best of luck to you, and keep us posted on any North American tour dates.
I will do.
Okay.
You
take care.
Thank
you. Yeah, you bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Nobody else can.
classic Angel Witch right there. The song Angel Witch. I've played that on Talking Metal before, and I couldn't find the MP3 on any of my hard drives, but I know I've played that song on this podcast many years ago. But I went and I re-downloaded it from Amazon Music, which is what I'm digging. I like that I do the streaming thing with Amazon Music, and I like that they have this option to play the music in a higher quality. And I was hesitant. I was like, is it really going to sound different for, you know, $3 extra a month? And it does. It does. It sounds better. I'm not sure what they do, but there's some songs I don't notice any difference at all, but other songs I notice an absolute difference when I stream them in this higher quality. Now, I don't think Apple Music has this yet, or Spotify. I know Tidal apparently does, but is that what it's called? Tidal? Yeah, but interesting. Amazon Music, I'm enjoying it. I was on Spotify for years, and I'm very now comfortable with that Spotify interface. So I feel the Amazon Music I'm still getting used to, even though I've been on it for probably 5 months at this point. It's not quite as user-friendly to me as Spotify, but it is good. And again, I think the music, it sounds great on there. So it's there you go. I'm on Amazon Music for now. We'll see. I just got a new iPhone, so maybe the iPhone 11, maybe I'll jump over to Apple Music since they are offering 3 months free. We'll see. Anyways, yeah, that song we heard, Angel Witch by Angel Witch. Thanks to Will Palmer for, you know, keeping Angel Witch going and flying the flag high. Looking forward to their new music. Hope they can get over here to the States. It sounds iffy, though, from that interview, I would say. All right, so without further ado, let's get into my interview with Wes from Puddle of Mud. Right now, off the new Puddle of Mud album, this is You Don't Know.
Mark Striegel, and calling in, we have Wes Scantlin from Puddle of Mud. Wes, how are you, man?
Doing great, thank you.
That's great to hear, man. And I gotta tell you, I've been listening to Welcome to Galvania for the last week, man, and loving a lot of these tunes. All great stuff. Sunshine, time of our lives is amazing. I really love the My Kind of Crazy, great song. Uh-oh, so much great stuff on this. And one thing is clear, I mean, you haven't put out any original music in 10 years, but your songwriting skills are still top-notch. You're such a great songwriter, man. How did you learn to songwrite?
You know, when I was a kid, I was in, I did practice, you know, my guitar in the basement of my parents' house, and I was trying to do these, like, Eddie Van Halen solos. I was trying to figure out how to play all these Van Halen songs when I was, like, you know, 11, 12 years old, and I couldn't get it, like, I was nowhere near Eddie Vedder's, like, you know, professional, amazing guitar work, and, you know, so my mom came downstairs and said, "Hey, Wes, you know, you should just write your own song, son."
Wow.
And I was like, "Okay." She's like, "You're not able to play like this man. So just write your own songs, you know."
So it was because you didn't have those shredder chops that it kind of defaulted to songwriting.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. I just couldn't solo that, you know, that great. I was trying to learn how to play Spanish Fly, you know, by Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, Van Halen too. Yeah.
You know, Van Halen is the main reason that I wanted to become a songwriter anyway, and an artist, you know, and try to, you know, be a rocker, you know, and do that for, you know, the rest of my life. So I commend them for, you know, their awesome songwriting stuff and everything they do. So that's the whole reason I'm even doing this stuff is because of Van Halen, man.
Nice. Nice. And when you sit down to write a song, do you think song structure, or do you just kind of let the emotion take over? What is your songwriting process?
The emotion take over part. Yeah. I kind of like to do it like late at night when everybody's asleep. So I don't got to deal with anybody's like, they're the way they look at the song. I'd rather just write by myself late at night, get the gist of the idea, and just go with the flow. A really good fight with your girlfriend really, really helps.
Right on. Well, I was going to ask you, because obviously you've had some crazy times, I guess we could say, over the last 10 years. And does that play into the songwriting?
It does. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of emotions when you're in a relationship with somebody, and you know, it just kind of fuels a really great, you know, way of writing, you know.
Right on. And the guitar, you know, songwriting aside, your guitar sounds are always so thick, big. What type of guitar gear do you actually use?
You know what, the studios that we, you know, do records in, they have like, you know, they have a ton of guitars, a ton of amplifiers, anywhere from like, you know, Marshall heads to, you know, Marshall half stacks. And then they switch it to like an Orange, you know, company head, we know that company, and then switch to like a Fender. So there's a lot of different dynamics and, you know, there's a lot of different guitars that are used, from like Fender Stratocasters or Telecasters and Gibsons. And, you know, the thickening one is like, it's called a bass tone or something like that. It's like the strings on the guitar are like, you know, they're almost like as thick as bass strings, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And do you do like a standard tuning, or you drop down? Like what is your general tuning?
Yeah, I'm usually going down like a half step, whole step. So we're like 440 half step down. And then, if the songs are in 440, they're a half step down. And then what I do is I tune my high E string to C sharp. And I also tune, you add that in there, it makes it a lot thicker.
Cool. And you guys are currently out on tour, right? Or you're about to go out on tour?
Yeah, I'm in Bend, Oregon right now. Got here last night. I'm just chilling in my room and sitting here fiddling around with the guitar, trying to, you know, clean it up a little bit. There's a lot of sweat on these guitar.
I know you're coming through our neck of the woods on the 11th. You'll be in Poughkeepsie, New York. The 12th, you'll be at Debonair Music Hall in New Jersey, Teaneck, New Jersey. I hope to be at that show. And what can the fans expect on this tour? Is it, you guys are headlining, right?
Yeah. We, you know what? We all do vocal warm-ups together. We're a really solid group of guys, and we all get along like tremendously well, which is awesome. And, we're just trying to perform the songs as close as possible with a little bit of flair, a little bit of ambiance, you know, a little bit of improvisation. And really focus on playing and singing well, you know, for the crowd.
Right on. And new songs, a lot of new songs in the set list or not really?
Well, we got a big set list. So we have Otto in there now, and we're working on like Sunshine, and we're going to be doing my Kind of Crazy. We got a lot of songs, man.
Very cool. And, you know, like back to the songwriting thing, do you do much songwriting with other artists? Because, you know, there's so many like songs on this new record, and I'm like, wow, I could even hear like a young pop star doing this one, or, you know, I can envision your songs being sung by other artists too. So is that something you work on with other singers and songwriters?
The whole record was co-written, you know, with other people and stuff. So it would, some of it would come off as like a little bit like what you just said, because I wasn't the main writer on this,
right. Okay.
On this album, completely the main writer.
Right. And is that a change for you? Were you in the past the sole writer of a lot of the songs?
It's always been a co-writer pretty much deal, you know. I like bouncing ideas off of people. I like giving credit where credit's due. And, you know, I get that same respect back for when, you know, songs do get split up and stuff like that. So, you know what? A hook is a hook and a hit is a hit. You know what I'm saying?
Right on.
David Geffen said it best, you know. You never really know you have a hit until it becomes a hit.
Right on. Right on. Hey, can you talk a little bit about your work that you have done with Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains?
You know, I've never worked with him songwriting. I've kind of performed, you know,
just
a couple
performance based stuff.
Just performance stuff, yeah. I mean, the connection with Alice in Chains and Jerry and Lane and everybody was like when I was first starting to sing, when Puddle of Mud was being created, I would basically just put the CD on and just sing right along with the whole record of Dirt and, other like Jar of Flies and, Sap. And that was kind of like a learning thing for me, you know,
right,
as a singer.
Right on. But you did do some playing live with him?
Yeah, I've only played live with Jerry at the Tsunami Benefit in Seattle. You know, that was a decade ago.
Right on, right on.
It's cool. Not longer.
Right, right. And a lot of times Puddle of Mud is referred to as post-grunge. How do you like that label or tag? Is that something you dig or not so much?
I think it's, you know, it's close. Maybe classic post-grunge super rock.
Okay.
Have some soup and rock and roll at the same time.
Right on. Cool, man. And so what does the future hold for you guys, looking into like 2020 and beyond?
Stay healthy, keep touring, write a record a lot faster and get another record out there before, 10 years pass by again.
Right on. Very cool. That's great news. And, you know, what has it been for you now? A year or two sober?
Yeah, it's a little over two.
Well, congratulations. That's great news, and we wish you the best of health. And please keep delivering this great music to us.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Everything's so blurry, everyone's so fake, and everybody's empty, and everything is so messed up. Preoccupied without you.
emotions in between us, but that's not very far.
Some classic Puddle of Mud going way back to 2001 off the Come Clean album, which was released August 28th, 2001. Long time ago at this point. Wow, time goes by fast. You know, craziness. Great talking with Wes. You know, I've always been kind of a casual fan of Puddle of Mud, so the best of luck to him. I hope he stays clean and keeps delivering some new music or, you know, keeps writing and delivering new music to us, if that makes any sense. Right now, let's get into some outlaw country. This is Sturgill Simpson. I know nothing about this guy. Sorry. Sturgill Simpson. But this is a request from one of our dear friends on Patreon. And if you want to get requests in and support what we do here on Talking Metal, go to Patreon. Sean from Patreon requesting this one. Sturgill Simpson, Fastest Horse in Town. Again, for Sean. Here we go.
Yeah. a gift card from God.
All right, Sean, interesting pick. Definitely a little outside of what we usually play here on Talking Metal, but I thought it was cool. It was aggressive, man. Felt real. You know, good one, Sean. I know, Sean, you said you might have to leave Patreon for a bit due to financial woes. Listen, I get that better than anybody. So I hope you can rejoin us on Patreon at some point. And there you go, a little Sturgill Simpson for Sean, who is was a patron on Patreon. I appreciate the support you've given us, Sean, and please come back and join us there again real soon. And on that note, we are going to end today's podcast. And again, just a little bit more on Patreon. If you join me there, you get a bonus podcast every Friday. That you can get that podcast with it as little as a $2 a month donation. Like, that's nothing. Man, my tall coffee from Starbucks each morning is $2. Give me a break. Come on, guys, join me there. $5 a month, I'll also send you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. I do put up some additional content and posts along. Victor helps me out with the Patreon page. Check it out. You know, even if you just want to poke around, you know, give us $5 a month donation and see how it goes. And if you're not into it, then quit. You know, you don't have to stay on there month after month. But yeah, I'd love to see you guys there. Okay, thank you for joining me on this epic episode of Talking Metal. Ozzy Osbourne, we hope you get well soon. Sad to hear you had to cancel the tour for your Europe with Judas Priest or postpone it. I'm praying you don't have to cancel the United States one in the summer. I got third row, Madison Square Garden. Yeah, man, looking forward to that show, Ozzy, in June. I hope you're well enough to do it. And, you know, your health first, though, man. Health first. Yeah, so God bless Ozzy Osbourne, right? Here we go. This is live Ozzy, Miracle Man, a song I'd love to hear back in the set list. You know, I know Zach hints at it a little bit here and there instrumentally, but I'd love to hear a full version of this. This is off the Just Say Ozzy live release, and it is Miracle Man by Ozzy Osbourne to take us out here on Talking Metal. Talk to you next time, guys.